time now for Minds Over Matter, the Bay Area's favorite quiz show. Today, moderator Dana Rodriguez is joined by two panelists, Brentwood realtor Daryl Garrison and technical editor Kira Pace. And now, here's your host, Dana Rodriguez.
Thank you very much, Joanne, and welcome everybody to Minds Over Matter. See, I sound like my old self again, I'm happy to say. And as my old self, I would like to recommend that you give us a call because we would love to hear from you. Because Minds Over Matter is an audience participation quiz program, so naturally what we are waiting for is your participation. Those two numbers are area code 415-841-4134. This is a great time to call, by the way. Area code 415-841-4134. Or toll free. Yes, we have a toll free number. 866-798-8255. Again, that is 866-798-8255. We would love to hear from you. And we do hope you will call soon because we want to get you on. We don't want to miss any of your calls at the end of the show. 415-841-4134 or toll free 866-798-8255. Also want to remind you, you can email us. We prefer you call, but you certainly can email us. And that email address is mindsovermatter1@gmail.com. So that is MINDSOVERMATTER1. That's the numeral one. mindsovermatter1@gmail.com. Of course, we are in live stream as we speak at kalw.org. And if you'd like to listen to the podcast, and who wouldn't, that would be at Yahoo, and that would be in a reasonable amount of time after the show today. That would be at kalw.org. Not at, what did I say, Yahoo?
Yahoo.
Yeah, wow. I know. Nobody listens to the Yahoo now except in the dim, dark past. Yeah. But kalw.org. And
I find us also on Friendster. Jeez.
Could be. Yeah, well, that could be. Right. And Google and Apple as well, but start with KALW. I'm sure that would be appreciated. Okay. All that being said, we're going to start with a round of introductions and then a round of questions. I made a mistake and Kira perked right up. So I'm going to make a mistake every week. And she's going to. And it's going to start with a round of introductions and then a round of questions as soon as I pull up Kira's introduction. And here it is. Kira Pace's golf handicap is that she can't hear about golf without dying a little inside.
It's true. Every time.
Uh-oh. And she's from Florida, too. At least
here. Oh, no, it was rough. It was rough going. I had to leave the state. And also, as I pointed out before, not from there, just lived there for a while.
I understand.
All right. Daryl,
plausible deniability. Is that what they call it?
Daryl and his wife, Debbie, just got back from Yosemite. They didn't take their trip for granted. They saw a bear with no teeth. It was a gummy bear. Daryl, take a hike.
Thank you. Our moderator, Dana Rodriguez, is happy the gay parade is being held at the end of June, as he feels that pride should always go with before the fall.
That's right. And nothing like throwing in a biblical reference. And all right, everybody, we're going to begin the questioning with Kira Pace.
All right. I have a couple plot summaries, some synopses, I suppose. How many do I have? I have seven of them. So I'm just going to read them to you, and you tell me the name of the book and or the name of the work, I should say, and the author. Pretty straightforward. So again,
when you say name of the work, which you changed from book, so could this be a play, a movie, or a book?
It's not a movie. It's written material.
Okay.
It's basically six books and one other. So here we go.
Graphic novel.
It is a graphic novel. All right. So here's the first. A spoiled young nobleman mysteriously changes into a woman and lives for 300 years, meeting key literary figures. That is the first one. Again, a spoiled young nobleman mysteriously changes into a woman and lives for 300 years meeting key literary figures.
Like they're telling my story, my God.
The second one is an American man in Paris whose girlfriend has gone to Spain begins an affair with an Italian man. Again, an American man in Paris whose girlfriend has gone to Spain begins an affair with an Italian man. Number three, a schoolboy meets Clive and later Alec, the gamekeeper on Clive's estate, and experiences a profound awakening. Again, a schoolboy meets Clive and later Alec, the gamekeeper on Clive's estate, and experiences a profound awakening. Number four, Stephen Gordon is a fencer, a scholar, a war hero, and daughter of upper-class parents who had expected a son. Again, Stephen Gordon is a fencer, scholar, war hero, and daughter of upper-class parents who had expected a son. Number five, the adopted daughter of a poor family has many amorous and primarily lesbian adventures through her schooling in Florida and in New York, where she pursues a filmmaking degree. Once again, the adopted daughter of a poor family has many amorous and primarily lesbian adventures through her schooling in Florida and in New York, where she pursues a filmmaking degree. Number six, an aging college professor, racked with depression over the loss of his long-term partner in a car accident, matter-of-factly plots his own death. Again, an aging college professor, racked with depression over the loss of his long-term partner in a car accident, matter-of-factly plots his own death. And the last one, number seven, a non-linear and recursive graphic novel memoir centered on the main character's relationship with her father, who is closeted. A non-linear and recursive graphic novel memoir centered on the main character's relationship with her father, who is closeted. So those are the seven works I have. I will give you guys a total of three if you have them.
No, Cheryl? I do not. No.
Okay.
All right. The first one is, I believe, is Orlando, Virginia Woolf.
That's right. 1928, Virginia Woolf's Orlando, a biography.
Yes. Sort of. And number three is Morris by E.M. Forster. No, yes, E.M. Forster.
E.M. Forster, yep. E.M. Forster, 1971, published posthumously, Morris. That is correct.
And number six is A Simple Man, I think. No, it's not. Is it called A Simple Man? The movie was called A Simple Man. I have to sort of think about
that. There was a movie called A Simple Man, but this is not that.
Oh, it really is
You're very close. I know what you did. And in fact, I'm just going to double check it to make sure I didn't mess it up. But I believe that is... Sorry.
This, I was thinking the movie, the one with Colin Firth, and where he plays the college professor who loses his lover.
No, you're right. Yeah, A Simple Man, I think, is Coen Brothers. Right?
No.
Simple Plan.
Anyway, but no, it's
A Single Man.
A Single Man. That's what I want. A Single Man. Yes.
Sorry about that.
All right. So those are your three. So we'll leave the other four to the audience. I can read them again if you'd like.
Read them again.
Okay, so the ones left for the audience are: an American man in Paris whose girlfriend has gone to Spain begins an affair with an Italian man. Stephen Gordon is a fencer, scholar, war hero, and daughter of upper class parents who had expected a son. The adopted daughter of a poor family has many amorous and primarily lesbian adventures through her schooling in Florida and New York. In New York, where she pursues a filmmaking degree. And finally, a non-linear and recursive graphic novel memoir centered on the main character's relationship with her father, who is closeted.
All right. And Daryl, you go ahead, please.
Well, I certainly felt dumb on that one. All right. I don't know.
You have a new reading list now.
Are those all like within the last 20 year kind of things, or older books maybe?
The ones that are left span from 1928 to 2006. And the oldest one that Dana picked off was also 1928. That was Virginia Woolf's Orlando.
Okay, that helps. All right, thank you. All right, ready? Mm-hmm. Dana, I know how much you enjoy sports questions. So here you go. I'll name a movie, and you tell me the name of the famous athlete who was in it. These athletes all made it into their respective sports halls of fame. For example, Airplane would be Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. So you've heard of these people. All right, here are five more. Five movies. Victor Victoria. Summer of Sam. Mm. Mars Attacks. The Countess of Monte Cristo. The Towering Inferno. Victor Victoria, Summer of Sam, Mars Attacks, The Countess of Monte Cristo, The Towering Inferno.
I would like to take Airplane, please. this is killing me. Mars Attacks, it's a boxer, right? Is it a boxer?
No, it is not a boxer.
Hmm.
The Countess of Monte Cristo, I believe, is Sonia Henning.
Yeah, she made it into the World Figure Skating Hall of Fame, Sonia Henning.
And I'm sorry, would you give the other ones once more?
Sure. Victor Victoria, Summer of Sam, Mars Attacks, and The Towering Inferno.
Well, The Towering Inferno is O.J. Simpson.
It is O.J. Simpson, yes.
Yeah, he had a prominent role as somebody who got burned to death.
Aw.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I know the one in Victor Victoria. That's the football player who played James Garner's friend. Was a Detroit, I think it was a Detroit Lion. And he was in the TV series. This is where Kira will be able to help me. He was in the TV series with the little black kid. Not Different Strokes, the other one. Webster, that's it.
Oh, yeah. It's, is it not Eubanks? It's,
No, Alex Karras.
Alex Karras, yes.
All right, there we go. Okay. So, just go over any ones that there are still out there.
Summer of Sam, Mars Attacks.
Right. Okay. I should point out that Chris got Victor Victoria, Alex Karras. Thank you very much, Chris. And Mark says, there is indeed a Coen Brothers film called A Serious Man.
Yes.
So, and Carlton was wondering if Giovanni's Room is one of the ones that you had on your list here.
James Baldwin's 1956 work, Giovanni's Room. That is, you said Carlton, right?
Yes.
Carlton is correct.
The Doorman.
That was the American Man in Paris.
Okay, good job. And let's go to a call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter. Hello? Not there? All right, I will do a question. Are you there?
Hello, I'm here.
Okay, go ahead.
Hello. Yeah, okay. So, you know, it was really sad to watch Biden a couple of days ago on TV in that parade. I do not want definite Trump to be president. But what his performance reminded me of a 1962 movie. Do you know which movie? Frank Sinatra? Lawrence Harvey?
Oh, the Manchurian Candidate, really?
Yeah, say it again.
The Manchurian Candidate, really? You had that they reminded you of that?
I really don't know, but was pretty sad. And we'll definitely have to get a different president than Trump or him. Okay, very quickly, let's go back to our topic. All right, chemistry. 60% or by weight of our body made of single element. Which one? Asked that before, but always interesting for you to hear it.
Carbon?
No, carbon only about 12%.
You said by weight?
By weight.
Oxygen?
Yes, it is. Oxygen. All right. The other one made the only element made during the Big Bang in our body. It's also a huge number. Which one?
That one's hydrogen.
That was hydrogen. Everything else made inside stars. So let's very quickly talk about rivers. Which is the longest river in the world?
The longest. Nile.
Very good. The largest?
It's the Amazon. Yeah.
Say it again?
Amazon.
Yeah. Amazon, you're right. How about the widest? Argentina. Rio?
Rio de la Plata?
Yes, it is. It's very wide. It's very, things like 100 miles wide. Okay, and the narrowest in China. Part of it is only 10 inches.
Don't know.
Okay, I'll tell you. What about the shortest here in the United States, in our neighboring state of Oregon?
Right, I saw something about a river that's only like a few feet long. It's super long. Yeah.
No, it is 200 feet.
It's a single letter name. It's like the S
yeah,
River.
Yeah, it's the D River. Okay, right. Now I'm going to just play one music and tell me which song it is, please. Okay.
Oh, imagine.
Yeah. Imagine, yes. Yes, we have it, Ed.
Which one is it?
Imagine, Ed.
Beautiful. Imagine there's no country, no religion, too. How much ahead all humanity would be. Beautiful song. I love Zenon. I love Yoko. Well, that was a great time, the 60s. Really great time. Thank you. Always a great show. Have a very good
day. Thank you, Ed.
Take care. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. We would love to hear from you. If you have a question or answer for us, feel free to call. Those two numbers are area code 415-841-4134. Again, that's 415-841-4134. Or toll free 866-798-8255. Okay, let me give you a couple questions here. What two fictional Western characters, remember it's your fictional Western characters, have been most often portrayed on screen? What two fictional Western characters have been most often portrayed on screen? Give you one guess each.
I'll go with Hopalong Cassidy.
That is one. Yes. 66 times. So, what two fictional Western characters have been most often portrayed on screen? Hopalong Cassidy is number two. 66 times.
I reserve my guess.
All right. Reserve your guess. Second question. I'm going to give you the literal translations of states' names. Okay, this is from Mental Floss. These are the literal translations of states' names, usually taken from some Native American language. Number one, Snowy Land. Number two, Flat Water. Number three, Weed Gatherer. And number four, the Long Tidal River. Again, these are literal translations of states' names, usually taken from a Native American language. Number one, Snowy Land.
Would that be Nevada?
It would be Nevada. Very good. Number two, Flat Water. Number three, Weed Gatherer. And number four, or the Long Tidal River. All right. Daryl had his. Got Nevada. Yeah.
I will just guess. How about Oklahoma for Weed Gatherer?
Mm-hmm. Not Oklahoma, no. All right. I will give you one more question because it's short. What was the first time an orchestra entirely composed of strings, played the score for a major feature film.
Oh my gosh.
Psycho.
That's correct.
Is it really? Hilarious.
All right. So, two questions. I gave you literal translations of states' names, usually taken from Native American. I'll take them to Native American in this case. Number one, snowy land. That turned out to be Nevada. Number two, flat water. Which state is that? Number three, weed gatherer. And number four, the Long Tidal River. And what two fictional Western characters have been most often portrayed on screen? Gerald, number two, which is Hopalong Cassidy. That's 66. What is number one? Okay. And let's go to a call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Hey, this is Fred in West Virginia.
Hi, Fred.
You got, is Nebraska flat water because it has the Platte River?
It is.
Okay. Very good.
Okay. You know, in the 1500s, colonialism was born around planting a flag somewhere and also a cross and claiming it as your land. In the past 60 years, that's been done by China and the U.S. and Russia. Where was each of that done? Where did the U.S. plant a flag in the last 60 years?
The moon?
It's theirs. The moon. Okay, the moon. Okay. How about Russia?
Well, 60 years was, yeah, Antarctic.
Yeah. No,
the Arctic. Well, wait, the Arctic and the Antarctic. Wait, which one? Which
oh, both?
One?
Okay. I would say, in Russia's case, the Arctic.
It's the Arctic, and where did they plant it? It was on the North Pole, but what was specific about it that was super interesting?
Well, I mean, it would have to be on an ice floe, because there's no land there.
That's wrong.
Okay.
Okay. Where is the land on the ice on the North Pole?
There is no land on the North Pole.
2 miles down, there's land.
So no.
In 2007... they took a submarine. It released a manned submarine. They planted a titanium Russian flag on the land underneath.
That's good.
The
I like
Arctic
it.
Circle. And they said the land was kind of yellowish, which was interesting. Okay, and how about China? Where have they planted a flag? This is the last 5 years.
That should be Antarctica, right?
No, China, no.
No. How about
China did
what
the
about
moon,
Mars?
Wasn't it?
Oh, did they
not,
do the moon
not
too?
The Mars. No, it's terrestrial.
They just came back from the moon.
Man-made land in the South China Seas. Maybe it's a made-up land.
Exactly. They took a submerged atoll, put land on it, put a flag on it, and claimed the South China Sea as part of China, which was interesting. Interesting. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you. Thanks, Fred.
Bye-bye.
And you're listening to Minds Over Matter. We're here every Saturday morning at 10 a.m. Hope you're enjoying the show. We certainly would enjoy hearing from you. If you have a question or answer for us, those two numbers are area code 415-841-4134 or toll free 866-798-8255. And also want to remind you, our panelists today, that would be Kira Pace, technical editor, Daryl Garrison, realtor in what city, which is the appropriate city?
Brentwood.
Brentwood, okay, sorry. And I'm your moderator, Dana Rodriguez, and you're listening to us on 91.7 FM, that is KALW, your local public radio station. Okay, Kira, I think it's your turn anyway, so you go ahead.
All right. The annual reminders were a series of demonstrations designed to remind the American public that LGBT people did not enjoy basic civil rights. They were held from 1965 to 1969 at what location?
Ooh.
The annual reminders. And then they were kind of rolled into Stonewall, like the, but,
I think I mixed up about this question. So go over that again.
Sure. The annual reminders were a series of demonstrations designed to remind the American public that LGBT people did not enjoy basic civil rights. Mm. They were held from 1965 through 1969 at what location?
Okay. Huh.
I would have guessed Stonewall. I don't know.
Is this is in New York City, may I ask?
It is not.
It is not in New York City. Okay. Huh. Interesting. So it is in, is it in a major United States city then?
It is. All right. Well, I can ask you a second question. We can leave that to the audience if you'd like, if you're interested.
All right.
Okay. This one's a little more local. A plaque in the Tenderloin honoring an LGBTQ event was installed at what intersection and why?
The intersection, I don't know, but isn't that the Compton's cafeteria or the cafeteria riot?
It is the Compton cafeteria riot.
Too. But I don't know the intersection. Is it Eddie? No. Don't know that.
Okay. Well, we'll leave the intersection out. Someone will know.
Okay.
Was the annual reminder something to do with this time of year, like a 4th of July sort of event?
It is.
Ugh.
But so, pre-Stonewall.
Pre-Stonewall.
Pre-Stonewall. Interesting.
So then like a Washington, D.C. or Philadelphia?
If you want to narrow it down.
Would it?
Uh-huh. Okay, so I'll Philadelphia.
I would need something a little more specific.
Independence Hall.
Independence Hall, Philadelphia. That is correct.
All right, good job. All right, so they just marched in front of Independence Hall. Is that the idea?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, they demonstrated
rocks.
Yeah.
And okay, and let's go to a call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Hi, this is Paul in Marin.
Hi, Paul.
Good morning. I liked that question about sports figures in movies. And for Mars Attacks, was that Jim Brown?
It was Jim Brown, yes.
Good job.
Very good. Also in The Dirty Dozen, I think. So I have a question for you. This is about actors who played teachers in movies. And these are actors who are playing classroom teachers, not coaches, not trainers, but classroom teachers where their interaction in the classroom was an important part of the film. Okay, so I'm going to give you 10 names of the characters, and you can tell me the actor and the movie. And some of these are pretty easy. So I'll just read down the list, and you guys can each take a crack at them. So let's see, we've got Charles Chipping, Gene Brody, Glenn Holland, Jaime Escalante, Charles Kingsfield Jr., Paul Hunnam, John Keating, Roberta Gaspari, Terrence Fletcher, and Don Dunn. And all of these won or were nominated for Academy Awards.
Well, who wants to start?
Well, yeah, so Glenn Holland, Richard Dreyfuss, Mr. Holland's Opus.
Yes.
And then Jaime Escalante, that was Stand By Me, Edward James Olmos.
Not the right
not
title.
Not Stand By Me.
That was Stand and Deliver.
Stand and Deliver, thank you.
Yeah.
John Keating is Dead Poets Society, Robin Williams.
Yes.
Okay, let me look at this. Why don't you just run down the list just once more, if you don't mind.
Okay. These are the names of the character of the teacher. Charles E. Chipping.
That's Gene the Brody. Goodbye, Mr. Chips.
Robert Donat.
Yeah.
Right.
Yes, correct. Gene Brody.
The prime of Miss Gene Brody. I'm trying to remember the actress's name. She won
Maggie
the,
Smith.
She did, Maggie Smith, thank you.
Maggie. Yes, that's right. And who have we got left here? Charles Kingsfield Jr., Paul Hunnam, Roberta Gaspari, Terrence Fletcher, and Don Dunn.
The Kingsfield that's from the Paper Chase.
John Houseman.
John Houseman. And Roberto Gasparri, that's Meryl Streep, right?
Correct. And the movie?
That's Music of the Heart. Is that what it was called?
Correct. That was her first Academy Award.
Okay. And
next we have, we still have Paul Hunnam, Terrence Fletcher, and Don Dunn.
Don't think I recognize those.
I'm sorry, you said they all had to be classroom teachers?
These are all classroom teachers. Well, school teachers, yes.
Okay, so yes. None of them is J.K. Simmons in Whiplash, right?
Yes, that is Terrence Fletcher, and okay. He was a high school music teacher. He was in the band room instead of the classroom.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Okay. Is one of these Ryan Gosling? Is maybe Paul Hunnam Ryan Gosling?
That would be Don Dunn. Yes,
Don Dunn. Yeah. I only knew that he was a teacher. Sorry.
Yeah. And the last one you're missing is Paul Hunnam, or Hunnam.
I don't know.
Paul Hunnam. Who is that? Oh, that's
you're not getting this
I
one.
Know who that is. That's very recent, isn't it?
Yes.
That was Paul Giamatti. He was just nominated for Academy Award.
Oh, The Leftovers or something like
yes,
that?
Yes, yes, yes.
The Holdovers.
Holdovers.
The Holdovers. Very good. Give yourself a bell. And I have, here's two bonus ones. Bonus ones. They didn't famous actors, but they didn't win any awards. Dewey Finn and Mark Thackeray.
Dewey Finn is School of Rock. Jack Black.
Good. Yes.
Paul
and Mark.
Is it
Thackeray?
Is that Thackeray?
I believe it was Mark Thackeray. Yes.
Oh, Mark Thackeray.
I don't know.
How long ago was that?
Oh gosh. Almost 40 years ago. Maybe more.
No. I don't know.
Okay. All right. That was Sidney Poitier in To Sir with Love.
Okay.
All right. Well, thank you very much. We'll talk
thank
to you,
you
next week.
Appreciate it. All bye-bye. Right. And you're listening to Minds Over Matter. If you have a question of your own, we would love to hear it. So please feel free to call. Those two numbers are area code 415-841-4134 or toll free 866-798-8255. Okay, and Daryl, I think it's your turn, isn't it?
Okay, I want to know the five top Emmy-winning TV shows that debuted in the 70s. The five top Emmy-winning, and these are all well-known shows. I will help you out here. Two of them are variety shows, and three of them are sitcoms. They won dozens and dozens of Emmys, all these guys.
So are you looking for the shows that started in the 70s that won most Emmys overall, or the shows that won the most overall Emmys in the 70s, that kind of thing?
They debuted in the – okay. So they debuted in the 70s. I will tell you. One of them, 80 Emmys, debuted in the 70s. One of them, 29 Emmys. Debuted in the 70s, 25 Emmys. Debuted in the 70s, 22 Emmys. Debuted in the 70s, 18 Emmys.
So the one with the 80 Emmys, that's got to be SNL.
Yeah, it is. Saturday Night Live, yeah. More than any other show, yes.
And I guess All in the Family. For
All in the Family, 22 wins, yes.
So would you give us the genre of the shows?
On yeah, so one variety show and then two more sitcoms.
So is Mary Tyler Moore on there?
I'm sorry?
Mary Tyler Moore?
Yes, Mary Tyler Moore, 29 Emmys.
All right.
So I have another guess, but should we leave the rest to the audience since there are only two left?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So one sitcom and one non-sitcom.
Variety show, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Variety show. Okay. All right. So just give the premise of the question once more, if you would.
They won, these five shows won the most Emmys of any shows that debuted in the 70s.
Okay. All right. And let's go to a call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
This is Roger in San Francisco.
Hi, Roger.
Yeah. Who is or was Alonzo Quijano?
I'm sorry, I didn't get the last name. Alonzo what?
Alonzo Quijano. Q-U-I-J-A-N-O. Alonzo Quijano. One of the most famous characters in all of literature. He changed his name later in life. What was the name we know him by?
Is that Zorro?
Is it who?
Is it Zorro?
No.
Okay.
No. He was born Alonzo Quijano, and sometime in his 50s, he changed the name.
Oh, is this a real person? Sorry.
No, it's a fictional
character.
It is fictional.
No. Wait.
You know this, Dana. You know this.
I do know this. This is something I read in high school or college, I have a feeling.
Yes, we all read it in high school.
Okay. All right. Then I think I know which it is. Yeah, is that Don Quixote?
It is. Now, the next question about that is, where was Don Quixote from?
La Mancha.
Yes, but where in La Mancha? No. What place in La Mancha was he from?
He's a man of La Mancha. Where in La Mancha?
You know this because it's in the very first line of the novel, and it's one of the most famous first lines in literature. And what does Cervantes tell us about the place where he was from?
I'm sorry, I don't remember. It's been too long.
Cervantes in the first line says that he was from a place in La Mancha whose name I do not choose to remember. We don't know. We don't know where.
Well, we have that in common.
Yeah. Okay, one more question. Most of the nations of the world are recognizing Palestine as an independent state. All of Latin America does except one country. All of Africa does except for one country. And all of Asia does except for two countries. What are those four standouts?
Presumably Israel.
But that's not in Asia or in Africa or in America.
So only one in, is this both Central
and South? In all of Latin America, only one country does not recognize Palestine. Only one country in Africa does not. And only one country in, two countries in Asia do not. What are those four countries?
Would you say there is a political reason for this?
One would assume, wouldn't you? The one in America is pretty obvious when you think about it.
The United States, I would imagine.
No, but we're not part of Latin America.
Well, that's okay. Asia.
Asia. Two countries in Asia do not recognize Palestine.
Would North Korea maybe be one?
No. Oh, no. And one country in Africa.
What country in Africa?
Well, perhaps, does Egypt recognize Palestine? Because they do have...
Think. You would think all of the Muslim countries would recognize Palestine.
Yes. So maybe something like South Africa, then?
It's not a Muslim country, no.
South Africa?
Yeah.
No, South Africa is a big supporter.
Tell us. Oh, we don't know.
Cameroon.
No.
Now, what's the country in Latin America that does not recognize Palestine?
Nicaragua?
No.
Latin America. The Guyana? No.
No.
I don't know. I'm honestly guessing.
Okay. It's Panama.
Panama.
And there were two countries in Asia.
Thailand?
Right. And what's the other one?
Is it because they're monarchies or some other reason?
It's a monarchy.
The other one's a monarchy, too? So they're both monarchies in Asia, the ones that don't recognize?
Well, Thailand is a monarchy, yes.
Yeah.
And the other one is also a monarchy.
Oh, okay.
Brunei?
No.
So that's Bhutan? A Muslim country. So that...
Bhutan?
Japan, correct.
Japan.
Very good. Very good. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you.
Appreciate it.
And you're listening to Minds Over Matter. Feel free to give us a call. We would love to hear from you. 415-841-4134 or toll free 866-798-8255. And we are past halfway. Quickly repeat any questions that have not been answered yet. Kira, we'll start with you.
All right. I still have three synopses that I just want you to tell me the title and authors of these books, or these works, I should say. Number one, Stephen Gordon is a fencer, scholar, war hero, and daughter of upper-class parents who had expected a son. Number two is the adopted daughter of a poor family has many amorous and primarily lesbian adventures through her schooling in Florida and in New York, where she pursues a filmmaking degree. And the third is a nonlinear and recursive graphic novel memoir centered on the main character's relationship with her father, who is closeted. Also, we know that there is a plaque in the Tenderloin honoring the actions of the gay men and trans women during the Compton cafeteria riot. What we don't have answered is the intersection at which that plaque is. So if you want to call in with that, still looking for it. That's what I have.
Okay. And Daryl.
I realized I made a mistake. The one show that won 25 Emmys actually debuted in the 60s. I'll give that one to you, and then I'll leave this one more. Carol Burnett's show did actually debuted in the late 60s. But anyway, there's a sitcom that debuted in the 70s. It won 18 Emmys. So you have Mary Tyler Moore Show, All in the Family, and then this one. And then the other one I have is What Athlete Who Made It Into the Hall of Fame appeared in Summer of Sam.
We have a guest from Joanne on the sitcom, mm-hmm. Which I guess does qualify as a sitcom, even though it may not be particularly sitcom-y, but MASH.
No, not MASH.
Oh, interesting. Okay. I gave you a list of literal translations of states' names. These are usually, in this case, all taken from Native American languages. So these are literal translations of states' names. The ones we have left are Weed Gatherer and the Long Tidal River.
I have a guess on the Long Tidal River. Is it Connecticut?
It is Connecticut, yes. Okay, so only the Weed Gatherer is still out there. And who are the two fictional Western characters that have appeared in the most feature films? The two fictional Western characters who have appeared in the most feature films. Hop-On Cassidy is number two at 66. Who is number one on that list? And all right, it's my turn, I believe, and I'll give you a quick question. The three U.S. cities with the highest rents, and I'm talking, and they do this they look for the price based on a one-bedroom apartment, okay? So the three U.S. cities with the highest rents based on one-bedroom apartment, New York City is first, not surprisingly. That's $4,200 a month.
Wow.
I know. San Francisco is third, $2,950. Remember, this is all based on a one-bedroom apartment. What medium-sized city that is not in California or New York is number two. So the U.S. cities with the highest rents, New York City is first. This is based on a one-bedroom apartment worth $4,200. San Francisco is third with $2,950. What medium-sized city that is not in California or New York is number two? And the average rent in this medium-sized city is $2,300.
Boston.
Nope. It's a medium-sized city, not a big city. But a couple hundred thousand.
I have no idea how many people are in Denver, but I'll just guess Denver.
It is not Denver.
What about, how about, everything's expensive in Hawaii. How about like Honolulu?
That's a reasonable guess, but no, not that. All right. We have a couple, some emails here. Zach. Question, curious question, graphic novel with a closeted father. Is that Fun Home by Alison Bechdel?
Yes.
All right, Zach.
Nice job, Zach.
All right, good job. Okay. And CM is wondering if the highest rent is in Miami. No, it is not Miami. And Carlton is wondering if it's in Austin. It is not Austin. So, all right, just once more. Three U.S. cities with the highest average rent, for, and we're talking about a one-bedroom apartment. That's what it's based on. New York City is first, $4,200 a month. San Francisco is third, $2,950 a month average. What medium-sized city that is not in California or New York is second? It's a medium-sized city. Keep it in mind. And let's go to a call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Hi, your caller who said Israel was not in Asia is incorrect.
Thank you.
Syria and Lebanon, it's in Southwest Asia.
There you go.
Thank you for saying
okay.
it.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.
Oh, thank you very much. Bye-bye. All right. All you have to do is ask and you guess. So, let's see. Paul G. is wondering, is Tarzan one of your fictional characters? No, oh, I see. He's asking me, but that's not a Western character. No, it can't be for me. No, wait a minute. I have to figure out how this works into it. No, Tarzan didn't make any Westerns. No, when I say Western character, I don't mean Western literature. I mean Western as in, you know, the Old West. Just in case you were wondering about that. And, okay, Gerald, you have a quick question you want to run?
A quick question. All right, this will be easy, straightforward. Here you go. What four elements on the elemental table have one syllable?
Oh, Kira's good at this.
Oh, no, let's see. Zinc?
Yes.
No.
And three others.
Oh, yeah. Joanne says gold.
Yes.
Are you Marianning that? Are you giving it an all the rest? Zinc, gold, and all the rest?
Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry.
Are there four? Is that, I'm sorry, did you say four?
Yeah, four have one syllable. Gold and zinc and two more.
Sorry. Of course, now I can't think of a single element. Because that's how it works.
All right. Okay. Leave it out.
All right.
And let's go to a call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Hey, it's Danny and Sandra in Albany.
Oh, hi.
Hi, yourself. Ten is another one syllable.
Nice.
Yes, ten.
Oh, very good. Yes.
Yeah, all right. Fourth one.
We were still standing in the kitchen.
Yeah, we're just yelling ten at each other. You're still looking for one Western character?
Yes.
Would it be Davy Crockett?
No, not Davy Crockett.
Oh, well, then Wyatt Earp. How's that?
Not Wyatt Earp.
Wyatt
Earp was a real person.
Holiday, but,
anyway. And so was Davy Crockett. Remember, these are fictional characters I'm looking for.
Oh. I know. When I was two, I wanted to be Davy Crockett. I thought he was fictional, so I never grew up. So, alrighty. Well, I got a quick pair of questions about country names, national names. There are three national capitals that have six or more syllables, but only one has six or more syllables. Has six syllables, but it's only one word. What is it?
So only one. I'm sorry. This is an international capital, or
it's a capital of a nation in the world.
International.
Okay. And it has six syllables, but it's only one word.
That's right. It's not Andorra La Vella or Bandar Seri Begawan, which are multiple words.
Can we ask? Would they give it away to ask what part of the world it's in?
It probably would.
It's in the terrestrial part of the world.
It's It's in the other hemisphere. It's not on the west, in the Western Hemisphere. I'll give you that right for starters.
Is it in Africa?
Yes.
I feel like it's in Africa. And of course, now I've got Bujumbura in my head, which is, it is not.
Is it the one, Nanouch, Nanashkat, Nanouch, is it Mauritania?
Is it in Jemena, or is it all kinds of wonderful, no, I don't know.
No.
Not Nanouchka.
Okay. Oh, Madagascar, Antananarivo?
Antananarivo!
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
All right.
Which the locals, I think, pronounce with an ooh on the end instead of an O, but that's okay. So, on the other end of things, there are four national capitals that are spelled with four letters. Sorry, there are 12 national capitals that are spelled with four letters, but only one is pronounced with three syllables. What's that?
So, four letters, three syllables.
Yeah, there's things like, you know, Lima, you know, there's Oslo, there's lots of two-syllable, four-letter national capitals, but only one is pronounced with three syllables.
Four letters, three syllables. Can you tell us what part of the world it's in?
Let's say the greater Pacific.
Yeah, it's like the capital. It's not Nauru, or not the capital of Nauru. It's not the capital of Niue, or whatever, or however that's pronounced. Or is it? Is it the capital of?
Neither of those.
So is it an island group?
It is.
Okay. All right. I'm not great at the island nations. Well.
You better tell us.
Okay. It's the capital of Samoa. It's Apia. A-P-I-A.
All right.
Yeah. Tough.
Isn't that fascinating? All right, well, that's all we got today, guys. We're enjoying ourselves. We'll see you next week.
All right, thank you very much. Appreciate the call. All right, you're listening to Minds Over Matter. We're here every Saturday morning at 10 a.m. Hope you're enjoying the show. I know we've had some tough questions tonight, or this morning, I should say. The two numbers are area code 415-841-4134. Or toll-free, 866-798-8255. I might have the last element. Is that lead by any chance?
It is lead.
Okay. All right. I'm never quite sure if lead isn't actually an element, but all right. I guess it was.
Yep.
EB.
Yep. All right. Good job. Oh, and Ellen got that too. All right. Thank you, Ellen. She probably got it before I did. Yes. Good job, Ellen. Ellen Carling did too. So, all right. Good job. And, Eddie has the correct answer. Eddie Horse, Hosey, has the correct answer to my question about the fictional character, the fictional Western character most portrayed on screen. And the answer to that is Zorro. Zorro. Yes, Zorro was the portrayed in 74 different films. So there you go. Good job, Eddie. Good job. And let's go to a call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Hi, it's Katie F. Collin from Allendale Park in Oakland. Happy Pride weekend.
Thank you. You too.
Thank you. So as an old San Francisco taxicab medallion owner, I really don't think of this location as in the Tenderloin, but I believe the Compton Cafeteria was on Powell between Sutter and Post. So is that where the plaque is?
It is not.
Oh.
I have a different address. I don't know if maybe it moved. I actually have a different address for the original Compton's cafeteria. I don't have it on Powell.
Okay, well, if memory serves, it was on Powell between Sutter and Post. So
okay.
I don't know the rest of it. But anyway, good questions. Enjoy yourselves.
Well, I can tell you, since you were a medallion driver, I can tell you that if you had a couple, a couple blocks to the west, and then, would you say, Sutter, maybe like four blocks south? You want to try that?
Okay, a couple of blocks to the west, it goes Powell, Mason, Taylor.
Taylor is
okay,
one.
Okay, Taylor, and how many blocks the other way?
You gave me a couple streets, so I'm going to say about four.
Okay, Sutter, Powell, Geary, O'Farrell, Ellis, Eddie. Is it Eddie and Taylor?
One more. Oh, wait.
Does it,
no,
does it
you, start you skipped with the, one. You skipped one, didn't you?
Does it start with the same letter as Taylor?
It does. And it's actually, I'm sorry, it's one south of Eddie in it. But
okay.
It does.
One south of Eddie? I'm sorry. What? I don't know.
Remember, it starts with the same letter as Taylor, so it's probably Turk.
Yes. So that was a nice tag team effort on behalf of Dana and our taxi cab driver. I'm sorry, what is your name?
Three letters, KDF, like Kentucky Derby finalist.
All right, KDF. Well, nice tag team effort with Dana and KDF. It is at Taylor and Turk, or rather Turk at Taylor.
Turk and Taylor, right. Well, thank you very much. We appreciate your call.
Okay.
And happy Pride weekend. Bye-bye. Okay, I think we should start to clean up here. Kira, we'll start with you. What do we got left, if anything?
Not much. Stephen Gordon is a fencer scholar, war hero, and daughter of upper-class parents who had expected a son. That is The Well of Loneliness by Radcliffe Hall from 1928. And the adopted daughter of a poor family who has many amorous and primarily lesbian adventures through her schooling. That is Ruby Fruit Jungle by Rita Mae Brown from 1973.
Oh, okay. All right. And Daryl.
Okay, so this sitcom that debuted in the 70s won 18 Emmys. So number one sitcom was Mary Tyler Moore Show. Number two was All in the Family. And number three was this one. And I'll give you a hint on the Hall of Fame athlete who appeared in Summer of Sam. Remember, that was directed by Spike Lee. And so this was set in the late 70s in New York. So you have to think of a New York late 70s athlete. And Spike Lee says, well, I could have used a clip from the 70s, but I actually wanted to meet this guy. So he actually filmed him and put him in Summer of Sam.
So it must be a basketball player?
No.
New York? No, it's not? Spike
Lee?
It's
a baseball player, isn't it?
Baseball. Okay. Yeah, when the New York, they won the World Series in 77 and 78. There's your era.
Yeah, don't know. Tell us.
That's Reggie Jackson. Rich,
yeah.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah. Makes perfect sense. And was that it for you?
Yep.
Okay. So the literal translation of states' names, the only one we have left is Weed Gatherer. That's Alabama. And the three cities with the highest rents, the one we were missing on that it is neither California or New York, that's Jersey City, New Jersey.
Oh, my gosh.
Jersey City, New Jersey, $3,300 a month.
Dana, I'm sorry, the sitcom, I didn't realize we were doing the real cleanup. It's Taxi won 18 Emmys.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah. Okay. Well, that's it for us. We do hope you enjoyed the show. We certainly enjoy hearing from you. Thanks to Kira Pace, technical editor, Daryl Garrison, Brentwood realtor, Joanne Marr handling the board and phones. I've been your moderator, Dana Rodriguez. And, of course, our thanks to you for taking the time to tune in and call in. We do hope you will join us next Saturday morning at 10 a.m. Happy Pride weekend, everybody, and have a wonderful week. Thank you, everybody. Take care. Bye-bye.
Thanks.